taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were everyday American.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And lately, I have seen more and more interest in a couple of plans to fix the Constitution. And I wanted to take some time today and kind of go over them, provide what I think are the pros and the cons, and maybe wrap up with what I think is the long-term solution to the problems these plans are trying to fix. Now, I recognize that not everybody's going to agree with me, and in fact, there's probably some of you out there that are going to be real upset with me as I describe this. But what I'm trying to do is not make a political statement. I'm not trying to be so much for or against any specific plan. I want to step back. I want to look at the reality of what is being described and help us all think about not just the short term, but the long term consequences of whatever decisions as a nation we make. You know, my favorite verse of scripture, the one I've lived my life by, comes from Acts chapter 17, verses 10 and 11. And in verse 10, Paul describes about being run out of Thessalonica for daring to propose a different idea. And then in verse 11, he describes the Bereans, the town he goes to, as being more noble, more fair-minded than those in Thessalonica, because they listened to what was said, then went back to Scripture to see if it was so. So that's kind of what I want to do, is I want to look at these plans. I want to listen to what people have to say, and I've listened to what a lot of people have had to say. I want to go back to the Constitution and see if what they say is true, but I also want to go on and I want to say, okay, well, what are the logical consequences of these decisions? Now, the one I've been dealing with most lately, there's two really I want to focus on. They seem to be the biggest hitters. I'm going to start with the Convention of the States. Now, I've seen a lot of good information. I've seen a lot of questionable information about the Convention of States. I've heard it referred to as everything from the last best hope for liberty in the United States to the actual rewriting and throwing out of the Constitution. So let's back up a little bit. Let's go back to the Constitution and see what it says. Now, the amendment process is actually unique because one of the problems with the Articles of Confederation, the agreement between the states between 1776 and 1787, is there was no way of amending it. There was no way of changing it. So there are ways of changing, of fixing the Constitution. And we've done it 27 times. 27 times we've amended the Constitution to fix some wrong that we thought was either in the Constitution itself or within the country, that something that was missing from the Constitution. Now, Article 5 describes the entire amendment process, of which the Convention of States is one of the possibilities. So Article 5 reads, "The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution or, on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which, in either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate." Okay, so there's a couple things here that are related to this discussion. There are two methods of proposing amendments. And it's important we recognize this is proposing amendments, not amending the Constitution itself. Now, the only way that has been done in our history so far has been the first method. Congress, by a vote of 2/3 of both houses, has proposed amendments to the Constitution. They've actually proposed many amendments to the Constitution. There were 12 amendments proposed for the original Bill of Rights. Only 10 of them were originally ratified, although one was eventually ratified in 1992. There's been discussion lately because they've tried to resurrect the Equal Rights Amendment, which was proposed but never ratified. And since that amendment include an expiration clause for ratification, it is a dead amendment, contrary to what some pundits have said. So that's the way we've always done it. Congress proposes amendments. In other words, the federal government, which is a creation of the Constitution, can propose changes to itself, to its founding charter. And that's what we've always done. But remember, that's only one part of the process. We have the states. The states are the parties to the Constitution. We'll talk about that in just a minute. So the other method is for a convention of states. Now, for there to be a convention of states, 2/3 of the state legislatures have to apply to Congress for them to call one. So we have, again, the legislature of the states, if 2/3 of them say, hey, Congress, we want a convention for proposing amendments, right? The term convention of the states isn't actually the language, but that's what we're talking about. So if 2/3 of the state legislatures ask Congress to call a convention for proposing amendments, the job of Congress is to call a convention for proposing amendments. Right? Now, I'm going to keep that in mind because we're going to come back to that as well, because there's still more information that we need to go through before we get actually into the process of convention of the states. Now, the next thing we need to notice is any amendment is considered part of the Constitution. It is just as legally binding as any other part of the Constitution. I've talked about that in other places. But understand, only after either three-fourths of the legislatures or three-fourths of a convention of the states have ratified it, right? All the proposed amendments in the world, all the work of Congress, all the work of the convention of the states, doesn't affect the Constitution unless and until three-fourths of the states approve it. They ratify it. And until that three-fourths ratify it, it is legally means nothing. So, you know, those who say, well, the convention state's going to rewrite the Constitution, no, it can't. They talk about runaway conventions. Doesn't matter what the convention comes out with, unless it's ratified or until it's ratified by 3/4 of the states, it means legally nothing. It's a suggestion, it's a proposal, it's a request. Now, there are two ways for the states to ratify this. One is by a vote of the legislature, the other is by a convention in each of the states. The method that is chosen is proposed by Congress. In other words, the two roles that Congress has in the convention process is to one, they can call the convention. That's it. But whether it's a congressionally proposed or a state proposed amendment, Congress basically says, yeah, we think we should have a convention, or we think the legislature should vote on it. That's the decision of Congress, right? That's all the power that Congress has. So for those who've been saying that, you know, well, you know, again, runaway state, runaway conference, you know, we're going to rewrite the Constitution, it still needs to be ratified by the states. Right? I've had several people say that that we have another Constitution that was created and turned America into a corporation. That's malarkey. It never went through the ratification process, therefore it's not legally binding. Now, I found no real evidence of someone saying, well, we're going to rewrite the Constitution. But even if they did, unless and until it is proposed in one of those two methods and ratified by 3/4 of the states, it's not the Constitution. It's not the amended Constitution. It's just somebody, either somebody trying to stir up animosity, anger, hatred, you know, vitriol, or it's someone trying to pull the wool over your eyes. That's it. So let's talk about the Convention of the States. Now, it is absolutely 100% constitutional for the states to look and say, you know what? We need to make some changes. I have zero problem with states saying we want to propose amendments to the Constitution. That's the legitimate way. The two legitimate ways of proposing those amendments are via Congress or via convention. I have zero problem, and I repeat this over and over again because I get accused of being against a convention. I don't have a problem with a convention of the states. I have no problem with the convention of the states. In fact, I want to see some amendments proposed. I'd like to repeal the 16th and 17th Amendment. I think those would be extremely, extremely beneficial amendments. Let's repeal the direct taxation of the people by the federal government, and let's restore the position of the states in Congress, giving them the states a say in federal legislation. Those would do a tremendous amount to restoring the balance of power in this country, to reining in an out-of-control government in Washington, D.C. I know I'm going to be called a lot of names. I'm going to be called anti-democratic. I'm going to be called a lot of things, you know, but there's a reason why those were put in place. And the reasons why direct taxation was banned and the states had a say are important. I'll probably deal with them at other times. That's why I know the other thing I'd like to see. I would like to see limits put on the ability of Congress to borrow money in the name of the United States. I want to see limits put on that. They've shown themselves to be untrustworthy with that. I'd like to have limits put in place. So those are the three amendments. And I have zero faith that Congress would ever propose those amendments. So I'd like to see the states do that. I would like to see the convention of the states, if one happens, I would like to see those amendments proposed. But let's take a look at a little reality here. Let's deal all with pie in the sky. Here's my problem with the convention of the states. It's actually not a problem with the convention. Let me start. Let me just explain what I'm talking about and see if this makes sense. Problem number one, from where I see, is, again, not so much with the convention. What's it going to do? Let's face it, the governments in D.C. and in all of our state houses ignore the Constitution. I don't mean they play footsie around the edges. I don't mean they skirt the edges. They flat out ignore the Constitution. All three branches, I'm going to focus on the federal government because, well, I don't know all the state constitutions, but the federal government blatantly ignores the Constitution. Congress has created executive agencies, departments that are not within its delegated powers. They have usurped power from the states. They are spending money on things not authorized by Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 of the Constitution. They violate and ignore the Constitution pretty much daily. The executive branch, I don't care what party, every president that I can remember, and that goes all the way back to Nixon, has violated the Constitution, has violated the oath of office to support the Constitution and execute the laws of the United States, the legitimate laws. So I can't, we have executive orders that are creating law. We have executive departments that are effectively creating law through regulation. We have executive departments ignoring the Constitution, ignoring the rule of law. There's a problem. Take a look at the judiciary. The judiciary has thrown out the Constitution. I mean, literally, wiped their backsides and thrown it out. And yes, I include the quote-unquote conservative justices on the court. The only one who gets a pass in my vote so far is Amy Coney, is Justice Barrett, because she hasn't done enough for me to know for sure. But when you have, but even from what I've seen or heard, the little I've seen makes me wonder, because when you have the concept that the government can infringe on a right protected by the Constitution if the government has a sufficiently compelling interest, violates the Constitution of the United States. When the Constitution says you have a right to be secure against unreasonable search and seizures, and the courts turn that into, well, you have a right to privacy. So they can search your stuff if they can get at it publicly, violates the Constitution. When they say your right to freely exercise your religion or speech or press can be curtailed if government has a sufficient compelling interest, that violates their oath of office. It's a violation of the Constitution. That is bad behavior, which should get them impeached. But again, Congress lets it go. So here's my question to everybody who supports the convention of the states, or more accurately, to everyone who thinks a convention of the states is going to magically fix all the problems in America, or even any problems in America. If they're ignoring the rule book now, how does changing the rule book fix anything? Imagine you're playing a game. Football, let's take baseball. Let's say you're playing a baseball game and you've got the umpire behind the plate and the rule book says that the strike zone is what? Shoulders to knees, the width of the plate. But the umpire says, I think I'm going to give him a few extra inches inside just because I feel like it. Because I think that's the right, I think that would be fair. How does changing the rule book mean anything if he's going to ignore it? Imagine a football game where the rule says in order for a pass to be legal, the ball must never touch the ground, it must be in a person's control, and both feet must be in bounds. But you know what? One of the referees looks at it and says, well, I know, but he tried really, really hard. He intended to be in bounds. He just didn't quite do it. So we're going to give him the pass anyway. I mean, that's how we run this country. The Constitution only matters when it supports your position. So if we're going to change the Constitution, how does that fix the problem? It doesn't. Oh, sure, there may be some short-term benefits. They may turn around and say, let's say there's a constitutional amendment for a balanced budget. And then we say, okay, you have to have a balanced budget except in times of war or certain circumstances. How long do you think before the court turns around and says, there's a sufficient, government has a sufficient compelling interest to bypass that, to go beyond that? Because, well, it's not a declared war, but we're acting like we're at war, so we need to spend the money. Why, if they ignore the rules today, do we think they're going to suddenly obey the rules tomorrow just because we amended the rules? It doesn't make sense. Again, it's not that I have an issue that I think we should not have a convention of the states. My issue is I don't think it's going to fix anything. And I think the evidence is quite abundant. You know, since the mid to late 60s, we've made changes to government that completely ignore the Constitution. And pick your poison of choice. I mean, the Patriot Act, Affordable Care Act, both of those are blatantly they are direct violations of the Constitution. Both of them went through. Well, again, if the Constitution is being ignored, how does changing the Constitution fix anything? And I'm going to repeat myself. I don't have a problem with a convention of the states. I just don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. I think it's a lot of effort. I think some of the proposed amendments that I've heard are better than others. But there's actually one more issue I have, one more recognition of the issues with a convention of the states. Specifically, how would Congress treat a convention of the states? And Article 5 of the Constitution says that when 2/3 of the state legislatures apply to Congress, that Congress shall call a convention for proposing amendments. That's it. Period. End of story. That's all the Constitution allows. But I want to read to you a little bit from a paper from the Congressional Research Service entitled "The Article 5 Convention Proposed Constitutional Amendments, Contemporary Issues for Congress." So this is what Congress, or at least the research arm of Congress, thinks would be the issues for Congress should 34 states' legislatures request a convention. Quote, "The Constitution provides only a brief description of the Article 5 convention process, leaving many details that would need to be considered if a convention were to become a serious prospect. In the event of an Article 5 convention movement generated applications approaching the 34 state threshold, Congress would face a range of issues and questions in anticipation of a potential convention summons. Among those would be the following. Is Congress required to call a convention? What constitutes a legitimate convention summons from the states, and what authority does Congress have to decide this question? What sort of convention would it be? General, open to consider any issue, or limited, confined to a specific issue? Could a, quote, runaway convention propose amendments outside its mandate? Is Congress required to submit to the states any amendment proposed by the Article 5 Convention? Does the Congress have the authority to establish procedures in anticipation of a convention? How has it addressed this issue in the past? What procedures does Congress follow when it receives state applications for a convention? How many delegates should a convention contain? How should the states vote? How long a term should the convention have? Could senators and representatives serve on an Article 5 convention? Would a simple majority suffice to propose amendments, or is a supermajority appropriate? What would the role of the District of Columbia, U.S. territories, and other associated jurisdictions? Would the president have any role in the convention? Now that is one paragraph out of this paper, out of the summary of this paper. And it goes on to describe all the ways that Congress could meddle in a convention. But I want to answer a couple of these quick questions right here. The paper's correct. It gives only a brief description of the process because that's all Congress has to do. See, many of the details have nothing to do with Congress. Congress is not the convening authority. In other words, it is not Congress ordering the convention. They are the conduit. So when it says, is Congress required to call a convention? Yes. It doesn't say maybe Congress will call. It says, upon the legislature, Congress shall call a convention. There's a question that's answered. What is a legitimate convention summons from the states? Application by the sent by the legislature. If the legislature passes a resolution, says we want a convention of the states, that is all it takes. What sort of a convention would it be? That's up to the states, not Congress. Is Congress required to submit to the states any amendment proposed by it? Congress is not submitting them. The convention submits them, not Congress. Does Congress have the authority to establish procedures in anticipation? No. All it has to do is, okay, we are going to call a convention. It'll be in this place starting this day. Everything else is up to the states. What procedures, when they receive it, the only thing Congress has to do is say, okay, count them. When there's enough, okay, we need to call a convention. How many delegates should a convention contain? Not Congress's problem. How should the states vote? Not Congress's problem. How long a term for the convention? Not Congress's problem. Could senators and representatives serve? Not Congress's problem. Would a simple majority suffice to propose amendments or a supermajority? Not Congress's problem. What role of the District of Columbia, U.S. territories, and other associated jurisdictions? None. We're talking convention of the states. Why? Because it is the states that are parties to the compact that is the Constitution. It is the states that sign and ratify. That's why it's only the states that can call the convention. And it's up to the states whether or not they want other territories to have a say. But they're not required to. Do you get an idea of, even if there's a call for the convention of the states, how it's going to be manipulated by Congress because they're ignoring the Constitution? So even if 3/4 of the states call for a convention, they're going to have to fight tooth and nail as Congress tries to weasel their way into the process, to manipulate the process, to butt their nose in where it doesn't belong. And I'm pretty sure the courts will be more than happy to say, yep, you can do that because you have a compelling government interest to be involved in that convention. I don't trust Congress as far as I can throw the Capitol. Why does anyone else? Now, what can we do? What can we do, again, involved with the Convention of the States or anything else? Well, I want to get to that after the break. But before we do that, I want to remind you that I'm going out on my Knowing Your Rights tour this summer. I've got several locations. I'm going to be right now. I've got North Dakota, Wyoming, Missouri on the list. Please go to constitutionstudy.com/tour. get some information about what I'm going to be teaching, the importance of knowing our rights, how to defend and assert them. That is the focus of this tour. I'm doing a couple of other things, but the focus is that knowing of your rights. So head to constitutionstudy.com/tour, find out more. You can see all of my dates, all of my locations. If you're going to be there, if you're going to be near any of those, please, I would love to meet you. I'd love to look you in the eye, shake your hand, and talk to you about your experiences, answer your questions. I would love to. If I'm not coming to your area, at the bottom of that page is a form. Fill that form out. And see, maybe I can come to your location. I'm trying very hard. I'm working with someone to try and get out to Idaho. It's kind of tough, but we're trying to work it out. I'm more than willing to do, to make as whatever trips I can to help spread this word. So please head to constitutionstudy.com/tour. Find out the dates. Let me know if you can come. If you want me to come to another place, please. I love speaking in front of people. I'm weird. I'm one of those guys that likes getting up and talking in front of people. I love meeting you face to face. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm very excited about it. And so please be involved. And you know, one of these things about this is going to be a bit of a difficult trip, right? Because I'm driving, because I don't trust airlines anymore. I don't trust that they're not going to require a shot with an experimental vaccine. So I'm driving, and that's a lot of hours on the road, and it makes for a very tired boy at the end of the day. But sometimes on the road, I can't sleep. And I've always had this problem. I spent 30 years traveling for work, and I've always had problems falling asleep on the first couple of days I'm in a hotel. So I'm looking forward. I've been taking these vitamins from Healthy Cell. And I've been doing the immune super boost, and it's been wonderful. My wife has been using the REM sleep, and she says it works really, really well. So I'm looking forward. I don't use it when I'm home, but when I'm on the road, I'm going to take this because you need a good night's sleep. One of the easiest ways to kind of deplete your immune system, to be more open to infections, is not getting good night's sleep. So head to healthycell.com/outloud. You will get 20% off of your first order. That's right, 20% off your first order because you're an America Out Loud listener. Try the REM seat. Try the Super Boost. Hey, maybe you want to try the Focus and Recall. Try these things. If they've worked well for me, I hope they'll work well for you. And you, again, get 20% off by going to healthycell.com/outloud. And please hang on, and we'll be back right after this break.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses, as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
AmericaOutloud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. We're back at the Constitution Study. We're talking about fixing the Constitution, changes about how our Constitution works and the plans that are being made and the good, the bad, and the ugly about it. Now, in the first half, we talked about the Convention of the States, and I'm going to reiterate myself because I'm accused of being against a convention. I am not against a Convention of the States. I just know that Congress will do everything it can to meddle, to corrupt the Convention of the States. And since not only the federal governments, but the state governments ignore the Constitution, I don't see how it's going to have any serious long-term effect. All it will take is a couple of court cases to kind of say, well, you know, we know that the amendment says this, but, you know, voila, voila. And the amendments change very little over the long run. Now, this half of the program, I want to talk about the other big change that I hear people talk about all the time. And boy, they people who are proposers are passionate about it. And I mean truly passionate about it. So I want to deal with it. I want to deal with it fairly. And that issue is term limits. Now, I want to be fair. Most people I know that are calling for term limits, they think it's going to fix a lot of the problems. But let's talk a little bit about the history of term limits. Now, different states have different rules about term limits. I'm not talking about state issues. I am talking about federal issues. Now, the only federal term limit that exists is the one for president. We're all familiar, hopefully, with the 22nd Amendment. It says no person shall be elected to the office of president more than twice, and no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected president shall be elected to the office of president more than once. So we now have presidents serve only two terms. Now, why two? Well, our very first president, George Washington, who set so many of the standards, so many of the traditions for the presidency, said that two terms was enough. He had done his duty. He had actually gone above and beyond, many say, of his duty. Two terms was enough. And it was generally considered the tradition that a person served no more than two terms as president. Now, there were people that tried to serve more than two terms. They ran for a third term, or they ran for a nomination for a third term, but no one was able to actually get the third term until Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Now, I'm not here to, at least not in this episode, to comment on the presidency of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Personally, I thought it was tyrannical and atrocious. But he won four times. Now, he died shortly after his inauguration for his fourth term. But shortly after he died, I find it interesting that the Republicans in Congress, the Republicans running for Congress, uses a platform that they would place term limits on the office of president. Why do I find that interesting? Because Roosevelt was a Democrat. See, the Republicans could not beat FDR in a straight-up fight. In a straight-up election, they lost time after time after they lost four times. Now, they wanted to change the rules. Now, I can understand that, right? I see people in Congress who have served, to me, well past their best use date. But you see, if they don't represent me, it's not my choice how long they should serve. So what does term limits do? Well, let's think about this for a second. Everyone focuses on the fact that a term limit means a person cannot serve more than X number of terms in an office. And that's true, right? The president cannot serve more than two terms. But it also means that the people cannot vote for that person to serve more than two terms. Now, whether you think Reagan or Obama should have served a third term or not, you didn't have that choice. Whether you think Reagan should have served more or Obama should have served more, you were denied that choice. So term limits don't simply prevent someone from serving. They prevent people from choosing the person they want most. So it is also a restriction on the people on who they can vote for, which is ultimately the point. You see, I never have seen a call for term limits against a member of the same party. It seems people really get upset about term limits when it's their opponent that wins election after election after election. So there's certainly a partisan, a political party issue, a component of this call for term limits. Absolutely, it's not all of it, but it's there. So term limits, in part, limit the choice of the American people. If you have what you think would be an awesome candidate, but you can't vote for them anymore, too bad. But here's the other problem. See, anybody remember when Obama, nearing the end of his first term, was meeting with President Medvedev of the Russian Federation? And he was caught on an open microphone telling Medvedev, listen, tell Putin I will be much more flexible after this election. Because after he won his second term, the president was a lame duck. He couldn't be reelected again. He had no incentive. There was no restraint on his actions for the purpose of getting reelected. It was impossible. Therefore, he would be freer. He was freer after his second election to do what he wanted because he wasn't going to stand for election again. Now, hopefully we're all familiar with lame ducks. We deal with lame duck congresses every year, every 2 years, right? From the election day until, January 20th when they take office, those members of the House and Senate that have been voted out, that, you know, what restraint do they have? So what? What are you gonna do to them? You can't arrest them for their actions in Congress unless they actually commit treason. What are you gonna do? We're gonna throw them out? You're not gonna vote for them again. They've already lost. They're gonna get sanctioned. Well, even if one of the houses of Congress could sanction them in the time available, so what? They're leaving. Even if they were expelled, so what? They're leaving. So now we have a 4-year lame duck president. Well, not right now, but we've had 4-year lame duck presidents. What happens when you have some percentage of Congress? What happens when members of the House of Representatives are 2 years as a lame duck? Not a few months. 2 years. Oh, that's just for the House of Representatives. What happens when senators are 6 years as a lame duck? So term limits also create lame duck representatives. I'm not real thrilled about that idea. I want ways to hold these people accountable. But here's the other part of it. And it's interesting. I've done a little research. I want to do some more about the number of seats in Congress. I'm going to focus on Congress in a moment. The number of seats in Congress that actually change party. And from what my research has shown, again, this is still preliminary research, on average, about 10 seats in Congress, 10 to 20 seats, may change party at any one time. We do have spikes of 40s, 50s, 60s, but for the most part, it's 10 or 20. Now, why is that important? So what happens if you're a lame duck in the House of Representatives or in Congress? Well, you're going to want to have your successor be from the same political party, won't you? So in other words, while you may not run for, you can't run for office, you can certainly run to help whoever the party's choice is to secede you. See, already the political parties hold great sway over your choice. Yes, you can vote in primaries, but as we've seen, or you know, back in 2016 and in 2020, the political party can manipulate that. They can manipulate your choices. Well, what happens when we have this revolving door of bodies going in and out of this seat that are wholly dependent on the party for their funding, for their committee assignments, for their ability to hold office? We simply further empower political parties to control seats. In other words, all we've really done is rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic. The problem isn't simply the fact that people are there too long. The problem is we keep hiring the same people to do this job. And if we can't hire different people, we're just going to hire the same type of people. See, this is the part that I think is the underlying problem, and it's the situation, it's it is the root cause of so many of the problems that people are trying to fix. And again, some of them are trying to fix with the amendment process, some are trying to fix with the term limit process, some are doing both, but I think they've missed the point. They haven't dealt with the iceberg. They're just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I want to go back in history. I want to go back to our nation's centennial, July 4th, 1876. President James A. Garfield is giving a speech. And in this speech, he says, quote, "Now more than ever before, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it is because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. If it be intelligent, brave, and pure, it is because the people demand these high qualities to represent them in the national legislature." I would take that to the next level, not just the national legislature, all elected offices. If those people be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it's because we tolerate it. If they be intelligent, brave, and pure, it's because we demand that of those who would hold those offices. So let's take a look. Let's back up. Let's go all the way back. Let's start with the Convention of the States. Now again, I do want to see some changes to the Constitution. I do want to see some amendments. Amendments that I think would never go through Congress, so I'd be more than happy to have them from the states. But the vast majority of the people that I've talked to, when they're talking about what the Convention of States will fix, are not problems with the Constitution. It is not that Congress has the power to create executive agencies. It's that they are creating executive agencies beyond their power they're allotted. But they do that. They act corruptly because we tolerate it. Term limits. Why do people serve so long in Congress? Because we, the people, tolerate it. Because we, the people, allow this to happen. There's an old saying, how can you tell when a politician is lying? The answer is usually some variation of their lips are moving. And that truly speaks of the state of politics in America today. Not simply for the politician, but for the voting public as well. What does it say about the American people that we knowingly hire people that are lying to us? And that the people that lie the best are the ones we keep hiring over and over and over again? What does it say that the American people continue to hire ignorant, reckless, and corrupt people to represent us in the national legislature, in choosing the President of the United States, in our state legislature, in our governor's offices, in our county offices, in our city offices, in our mayors? What does it say about the American people that we knowingly hire people who are ignorant, reckless, and corrupt? See, we don't need an amendment to the Constitution to control Congress. We need we ourselves to control Congress. We need to demand, not request, not beg, demand that they be intelligent, brave, pure to their oath. Each and every elected official in this country swears or affirms in their oath of office to support the Constitution of the United States. If they don't do that, if they take that solemn step to swear or to affirm that they will support the Constitution and they knowingly, repeatedly violating it, they are corrupt. Why do the American people tolerate that? Why, when people are actually trying to stand up for the Constitution and in doing so are bucking against their party, they're vilified? When was the last time we stood up for a member of Congress for doing the right thing? For pointing to the Constitution. I don't mean just saying, well, it is. No, I mean, look at right here. It says this, and this is my requirement. This, when was the last time we did that? See, I think the underlying problem is the American people are looking for someone else to blame and for someone else to fix the problem. The problem with Congress is not how long someone holds that office. That is a symptom, not the problem. It is a symptom of an underlying infection of ignorance and apathy in the American people. The fact that Congress and the presidency and the courts and the states routinely ignore the Constitution is not the problem. It is the symptom of an American populace that will not hold their elected officials accountable for their actions, that tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. When was the last time you went to any elected official in any office and demanded that they act intelligently, that they know what their requirements are from the Constitution of the United States and from the Constitution of their states? Demanded that. That they be brave, that they stand up to the political and the media attacks that come when you challenge the status quo. When was the last time that you demanded they hold pure to their oath of office? And you let them know that if they cannot meet those demands, if they will not act intelligent, brave, and pure, they have no reason to be in that office, and you will do everything within your power to ensure they can no longer destroy this country through their ignorance, their recklessness, and their corruption. I don't have a problem with convention states. I have a problem with term limits. Because term limits are basically saying the American people are too stupid to vote properly, so we must put guardrails around them. Now, sadly, I believe many of the American people are ignorant. By ignorant, I mean they just don't know. They haven't been taught. We have taken our children at 5 and 6 years old and handed them to the government and say, you teach them, and we'll just stand back and you teach them whatever you want. We won't even bother overseeing what it is you are teaching them. And then we're surprised that they don't recognize the power they have over their state and federal governments. They don't realize that the constitutions of almost all the 50 states say all power is inherent in the people. They're ignorant. I can excuse ignorance because it can be fixed. All it takes is a little education. It's what I try to do here. That's the purpose of the Constitution study, is to help people read and study for themselves, to teach the rising generation to be free. So you can fix ignorance. But the problem is, we have a lot of foolish and stupid people. Now, by that, I mean foolishness is ignorance paired with naivete. They don't know, and they don't care. They simply think, well, Congress knows best. The president knows best. The courts know best. We have to trust Dr. Fauci. The bureaucrats know best. If you get a government paycheck, you know best. They're naive. Now, that's harder to deal with. Usually, it requires a good smack upside the head with reality for someone to realize that their ignorance and naivete have led them to make foolish decisions. The one that truly bothers me is stupidity. Ignorance paired with hubris. I don't know, but I'm sure I'm right. See, that's what concerns me with both the Convention of the States and the term limits movements. Many people haven't thought all the way through the consequences of what they're asking for, but they're sure they're right. They're sure that somehow, magically, an amendment to the Constitution is going to get those in Congress to follow the rules, not realizing that the same people that we have today that are elected were elected by we the people. Changing the rules without changing how the people vote, without having people vet their candidates better, gets you the exact same outcome. You're tinkering with a Band-Aid while there's a broken bone in your leg. You're playing with the deck chairs while there's a hole in the side of the ship. Now, the good news is this is easily, well, not easily, the solution is simple. As I said, it starts with education. It starts with learning how we should be vetting our elected officials. That every elected office is exercising a power of the people. Well, with the exception, you know, of the Senate and the President. But we're talking about electing people that are exercising your power in your name. State level, federal level. They are exercising the power of the people in the people's name. They are public servants, not public masters. So step one is educating ourselves and recognizing those in elected office we have hired to serve us, not the other way around. We didn't hire them to master us. We hired them to serve us. To hold them accountable, to hold them to their oath of office. If I cannot trust you to fulfill your oath, how can I trust you with anything? If I can't trust you to place your hand on the Bible, your other hand in the air, and swear or affirm to support the Constitution, how can I trust you to spend our money, to write our laws, to be in control of nuclear weapons, to have the power to declare law? If I can't trust you to keep a simple promise, an oath that you have taken to support the Constitution, how can I trust you to do anything else? Consider convention of the states and term limits are solutions to a symptom. They do not fix the underlying problem, because the underlying problem in America today is we the people. The preamble to the Constitution says, we the people do ordain and establish this Constitution. The Constitution, as it sits today, has the fix for the vast majority of problems that people are trying to fix with a convention of the states or term limits. The problem is, we the people won't use the tools and the power that we have. We will not demand that our states do their job as parties to the Constitution. We do not demand that our elected representatives at the state and federal and local level fulfill their oath to support the constitutions of their state and of the United States. Until we demand that, everything else are deck chairs on the Titanic. And for those of you out there who are now really pissed at me, because most of the people that support these get really, really adamant, my goal is not to piss you off, but to open your eyes and expand your horizons beyond the immediate desire to do something and to figure out how to do something that will work. Because we're not simply dealing with the country I live in and you live in, we're dealing with the country that our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren will inherit. And I am not prepared to leave that to a solution that may make us feel better in the short term, but in the long term, allows the rot, the corruption, the degradation of our nation, of the law, and of the Constitution, simply so that we can feel better because we've done something. It is time we look to do the right thing. Not simply the short-term fix, the long-term solution that is in our control. Let's stop looking for someone else to fix our problems. Let us see what we can do to fix the problems ourselves. So please, be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for the latest news and happenings and other programs like this. It's important that we all do our part, that we share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and the videos so that we can help ensure that the sacred fire of liberty remains alive and well in America.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.